Hello.
Hey.
We're here.
Now what?
Where do we go? Where are you? Where am I?
Where do we go from here? How do we reconcile all the decisions that we've made in our lives that brought us to this moment?
You can just hear by the reverb from where I am that I'm doing it at the Arby's on Lombard in the yep. bathroom.
In that bathroom, you know, it's kind of easy to sneak in there with a little bit of plywood that you can use to wedge the door shut. They're so busy in there, you know, they don't notice. And once you're in there, you know, it takes them forever to get in because you've wedged the door shut. They give up, you know, they're not getting paid that much.
They don't care. My favorite thing about is there's a veil between me and the boys who are grinding the meat, and you know they're putting the cattle through those machines. You know they have the saws, all the huge saws that they're constantly putting the giant halves of cows through, and the big grinders where they're shoving them through. But there's a wall is so thin, and you could feel the heat and the energy from the boys working in there. You know what I mean? Yeah. And you're in the bathroom doing the show, and you can hear them.
It's a synergistic relationship. It's a give and a take, you know?
Right.
You can't, it's symbiotic.
Those birds that are in crocodiles' teeth, or the leeches that go on men over 60, those parasites.
You know, they attach to your torso, and they're cleaning up the buildup, and so they're surviving off the buildup, and they're keeping you clean, and so that's you both win.
The buildup is no match for them, though. The buildup happens at a much more rapid rate, and so they become full and almost too satiated. They become
the plump.
You know, 1,000 years from now, they'll become free thinking, almost man-like beings.
Yeah, the human will become the parasite. They'll become the dominant.
Right.
You know, whatever.
Erotically, there will be a definitely erotic relationship then. That will be the symbiosis in 30,000 years. It will be erotic.
There is something, you know, inherently erotic about a parasitic relationship. You know, we're a little worm, or the little fish that crawls up your pee-pee hole, you know?
It's the only way for us men to feel like we... like how a woman feels like when our seed has penetrated the womb.
Women are like, what are men talking about? This is what men are talking about. We're talking about wanting to know what it feels like to be infested
with the parasite.
I want to be fertilized.
Just fertilized. Oh, and now I feel like you look longingly with a tear in your eye. I now know with a bloated belly. I now know what it feels like to be pregnant. But my fear is that's why they go to the Amazon. If they're always go, oh, why are you going to go swim there? It's dangerous. It's like, I hope to have one of those fish swimming in my pee-pee. And wreak havoc in my downstairs.
Yeah. I went to like art camp as a child, and I remember one of the counselors who was just like he was like 16-year-old hippie dude. And there was like a river next to the camp, and we were floating down the river. He took us against the rules and let us go float down the river, and he got in big trouble. But we were floating down the river, and he's like, all right, guys, like, you know, don't pee in the water, because when you do that, you're opening yourself up for the little parasites to swim in.
Right.
And so that was the first moment when I learned about this thing.
Right.
And it made a big impression on me. I still think about this guy.
Exactly. He's just so worried. He's afraid. He's afraid to urinate in open air. He's afraid the parasites could get in then too. He's like airborne. They are so attracted to my urine because they're talking about his urine.
Yeah. I don't know if peeing is actually part of it. Like, do you have to pee? Like, it opens up your
urethra.
Your urethra.
And the animal, the parasite, senses it. It senses the opening. It could feel the ripple, just that tiny ripple through the air. It can sense it. It says, now is my chance to get in.
But you think that the urine stream would be its own, you know, kind of deterrent, right? It's pushing outward.
Pushing outward, yeah, I don't know.
But maybe, you know, this guy knew that I have a very gentle stream. Right. You know, it trickles out. You know, we've talked about how men compare.
You purposely get a prostate. You get your prostate the size of a grapefruit, and then your stream goes really soft, and then the parasites can really just leisurely swim in.
Yeah,
and that's probably what he did because it's his thing, and he wants to feel what it feels like to be a woman.
Yeah,
to be pregnant, to truly pregnant.
I want to carry this to term, whatever that means.
I don't care what it means. I remember there was I feel like I read it, and maybe I heard her speaking on NPR or something, but it was a woman who had done something. I think she was a biologist working in Africa, and she had a botfly laid its egg in her face and above her eye. And she was like, and she described it as carrying a term, like she almost had an affinity for it, you know? Like, you know, because she's obviously a biologist, but also I think there is, you know, there's an erotic relationship. There's a psychic relationship. You guys are feeling, you know, it's feeling each other's beings. You know, your chakras have opened way too much.
She tried to play it off
and hungry. But yeah, she
tried to play it off like it was like a paternal or maternal thing.
Right.
But it's actually like there's a little bit of she was getting a little tingle.
She was
downstairs.
Getting tingly.
Yeah,
and it's the only way that you're allowed to you know, it's a tingle, like, you know, yes, it's inner species or outer species, but you know,
yeah,
it's acceptable.
It's okay. Can you get a bot fly around these parts?
I don't know. I think you'd have to get back on your old Silk Road account. Yeah,
Silk Road 7. I gotta log in.
I got it.
The find my trusty botfly merchant.
Botfly, where do you get? I need a botfly. You know, what do you want with it?
What? Yeah. Well, I want to carry it.
Yeah.
I want the experience.
And just that like maybe in like you could be the forefront of that. And at first it'll be a secret underground group, or maybe this little, we'll meet at a coffee shop and we'll get infected by botflies. Then we'll start getting bolder and just going out in public more with the obvious botfly cysts that are growing out of the sides of our face, and people see it and it becomes more like, you know, how some people looked at goth as like, oh, that's so different, I don't understand it. This would sort of
it just makes
like
me
that.
Uncomfortable. Yeah.
And then
it becomes, you know, accepted part of culture. Everyone's doing it.
And you know, it's, we celebrate the birth, the release out of the cocoon of the skin, the human skin. Yes, the human skin dies, but but out of that comes this beautiful creature that will go to someone else's face and infest.
Yeah. I think the only things I know about botflies I've learned from you. I really don't know much.
I just know that they go, it's always in their face. It's like, God, it was on the side of my neck. Like, my God.
So they lay their egg inside of you, and then the egg grows. And yeah.
And you can't disturb under law because they're protected.
It's endangered.
So you have to
legally. It's
let
huge
it do
fine.
Its thing. Like, oh my God! Oh my God! And they tie you down. You know, you're sweating bullets. You have a high fever. They tie you down, and then
just horribly infected. In agony.
You're in agony, and you don't realize how big the fly is too, and it's really trying to get out of this area of your leg, and then you're scared. When you're the most scared, you look up at the doctors and you think they're going to be comforting. You could clearly, they have an affinity for the fly.
They're watching rapturously. They love it.
Dotingly.
It's like a religious experience for them.
And there you are.
It's nice.
Oh my God, please. They can't give you any medication. They can't give you pain medication because if it reaches the fly larva, it could hurt it.
It'll damage it.
Right. Anyway.
Yep.
That's all I know about the botfly.
What else do you need to know? That's
a lot of information.
The the long and the short of it, really.
Write a book about it. I still think we need to do our book, and our book would just be like 5 episodes in a row, just on paper. Sell it on Amazon. Yeah. What could go wrong? Yeah.
What could go wrong? Well, so, but we'd have to like feed like some sort of transcript bot or whatever.
But we would have to call it we would have to call it the quintessential book about bot flies, fly.
Yeah.
Taxonomy.
Bot fly taxonomy whatever. We'd make a very technical sounding.
Very technical.
Boom. Get it in some nature libraries or whatever.
Yeah, boom. Get people interested.
Yeah. Because you look at the Google search, popularity for things, people are going nuts. Googling bot flies.
They love
so,
it. Can't get enough.
It's a really, the SEO, is great for
because
that.
Because it turns out,
really,
bot flies are the only animal, the only creature besides human beings that get sexual pleasure and do... orgasms and pleasure, and also pleasure themselves. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Right.
I do. I do know what you mean.
Man, I turned 50 and I get an insane amount of traffic about, man, you gotta do this Viagra stuff. But I do not need to be horny in the slightest bit. You know what I mean? I don't need, no one needs that. No one wants it to happen. Not myself either. Yeah, but it could try to get a 4-hour erection. It doesn't sound right to me.
Yeah, I get the Hims ads all the time.
That's what it is. It's the Hims ads. It's like, which one? Take a cocktail of all three. You'll get hard. It'll last forever, and you'll be, terrifying.
Yeah, the thing I get worried about is when you read about, they're like, oh, sometimes you get a boner that won't go away.
Right.
And then what if you have to go pee? Like, that's my deepest fear.
Well, that was I know that's what would happen to me. And then you go to the doctor and they just come and they all talk and then they come and then a guy comes and he's got a syringe.
Yeah, huge needle.
And he's got to put it in there to soften it up.
Yeah, he's got to extract blood out of it.
Right.
To get you.
You need a blood
to go
you
limp.
Need a blood transfusion. That's just a test to see if you need the full blood transfusion, which you do.
You do. You still can't pee for another few hours.
Get Keith Richards' blood put in you by mistake. They still have his blood.
Yeah, they keep it around because
they
just
got
in case.
Rid of his blood, right? So they because he got replaced his blood.
You're transfusing it. That implies that new blood goes in, old blood goes out.
It goes somewhere. It has to go somewhere. By law.
It has to go somewhere. Legally.
It needs to go into another man, unsuspecting.
The man can't know, but it has to go into
him. I feel awful. What's wrong?
Why do I feel? I just keep getting worse.
Right.
Well, it's our sacrifice that you got.
But then
make.
You get a certificate that says you have Keith Richards' blood, and you can pass it on, but usually they keep it for about a year.
Yeah. Like you can pass the blood on to another person.
Right. I would imagine that's how it works. I don't know a lot about the human body.
See, you carry the blood. It's in you. And then you're like, okay, I've had my fill. I'm ready to get rid of it.
Just get rid of it. Get new blood. And that blood still retains its filth, if you will.
Yeah. The filth. The filthiness. Right. What sticks to your veins.
I don't know. I don't know a lot about the human body because I don't like. I also don't like thinking about the human body or looking at it.
No, disgusting stuff in there. Tubes, pipes, squishy, kind of spongy things.
It's wet.
It's wet. Smells bad, probably.
Yeah,
smell good in there.
It's carbuncly.
Pus, bile. There's bile everywhere. Like, oh, your kidney secretes a bile.
Yeah, everything does. They always say. I feel like it's like they're finding a new star. We found a new star in this galaxy. It's the same thing where they're like, we didn't realize the lungs also secrete bile. They secrete more bile than the pancreas.
There's this is a real bile. Like, wow. I don't even know if you can call the other biles bile anymore you discovered this one.
Right.
It's the most bile.
It's just
bile.
It's like exploring space.
I don't even know what is like what constitutes bile. Like what makes something bile as opposed to just like a different excretion.
It's yellower.
Is that it's it? Yellow. Is that the color? It's just the color.
Dark, it's a dark yellow. You know?
If the mucousy excretion is yellow, that makes it bile.
It looks like a Denny's from 1978.
Just the color tone.
That was where we hung out. I'm sure a lot of people are the same.
Yeah.
I think if you grew up in the 90s, you were your main hangout was at Denny's.
Yep.
And that was it.
There was a diner in Seattle. I don't remember the name of it now, but it was like an old diner that was open 24 hours.
Yeah, we had a couple of little places, but like Denny's, it's like because you knew like the like.
Yeah, or Sherry's. Did you have Sherry's?
From the other town would be there maybe. So you would go and it would. But my favorite is like there were these people working and we would all sit. There'd be like seven of us and we'd be like a couple people would order fries. Everyone would order something. You'd have to order something. So it was a coffee.
Coffee.
And we would just sit there for like 4 hours and then tip them, I'm sure, like $6.
Yeah.
But.
Yep.
And then
Denny's, we do Sherry's, or we do like the little one-off diner. But
yeah,
because like sometimes you can kind of sense the there's like a rivalry between Sherry's and Denny's. But I don't think Sherry's is even around anymore.
It was a Wags
that I see.
Wags.
Ooh, Wags. I don't know Wags.
It was a subsidiary at one point of Walgreens. Yeah, there was Wags. There's also Baker Square.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, Baker Square. It was like if you wanted to get like some pie, and they were generally the older. Like the Denny's was great because you could smoke and it was like lots of they knew what they were gonna. It wasn't gonna be, you got to order breakfast. It was just sort of like get some fries and coffees and sit for 6 hours.
Yeah, some like chicken tenders.
Chain smoke at age 15. You know what I mean? Smoking a pack a day. just sitting there, but it was fun, you'd see other punks and stuff, and then we would just go down the street and sometimes we would break in the animal shelter and kill all the animals there.
just like boys being boys.
Wait, you what? Just boys. We were just boys. We were young boys.
We
didn't know how to get our frustrations out. Yeah, man, one time we went, there are people who would do, not that, but like get into fights or like commit crime. Like my friends for a while, they were like stealing, like joyriding cars. And I was just like, man, that seemed pretty heavy to me, but
yeah,
God bless them. They're all dead, all those guys that did it. So maybe that's
rest in peace.
Maybe that's a warning. They all died from different stuff. But they all did die in cars, which is weird.
That's not surprising.
My friend, man, one night, my friend, rest in peace, Mike, I love him to death. But he had this car. It was a Duster, but it was a newer Duster from the 80s. It was like sort of almost a smaller car, but it, I think maybe had like a big V6 engine. So it was sort of marketed as this like...
Yeah,
on the other line of muscle cars, but it wasn't. It was just sort of a mid-sized car and a small car's body. Anyway, and he took me one night, and it was just the kind of stuff that we would do in the suburbs. Some of these guys, he'd be like, "You got to come with me. You got to run a little errand, do something." And I go, "Okay, that's fine." I get in the car with him. We drive down the street, down the other part of the where we grew up. And we pull up next to one of the same car, a Duster. And he's like, this wheel is bad. He's like, I need to switch it out with this guy or my tire.
Get this
flat. And so I was just like, okay. And I was just had to help him. And I just did it. I just went along with it. And then just later it was just like, I can't commit
stole
crimes.
Some poor guys.
This some guy poor comes guys. Out. He's like, why? He took his wheel
I have
off.
To go
no,
to
no,
work.
No. We just drove and he just took his wheel and he wrote a note and he was like, do not try to drive. I took your wheel and tire.
That's nice.
It was very nice.
That's nice of him.
But yeah. That's
thoughtful.
He's also the same guy that he was a really funny guy. He was 16 and he had already been in like two like pretty gnarly fights with like men in their 40s. And like, it was like, I mean, imagine like, you know, this whole school talked about it. He went one weekend, was like, went to the mall, was waiting in a parking spot. There was no parking. So he got out and ran, was waiting. And this guy came and he was like, get out of here. Get out of here. Like, he's like, I'm waiting for my friend. I'm waiting for my friend to come around. He's like, no. And he like fought with him. The guy gets out of the car. He's like a 45-year-old guy.
Yeah.
Comes at my friend Mike. My friend Mike, 16, just, or maybe 17, just knocks this guy's teeth out of his head. I mean, just. And then it turns out it's this guy. It's his classmate's dad. And so it just like went through school like wildfire, you know, and it was just like the trashy, I mean, just so trashy all around, you know,
just Midwest. I want to get in a fight with a boy.
And then he did the same thing. And then
40-year-old man.
He beat up an old man at a hockey game. The guys were screaming and getting mad, you know, and he was just like,
yeah.
Also turns around like, oh, fuck yourself, to my friend who's a 17-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And my friend was just like,
boy.
But my friend just beat him to a pulp at this thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's dead.
Yeah. I want to get beat up by a boy.
Right. Yeah, like maybe coach your son's baseball thing and then start screaming and yelling at one of the kids, like, yeah. You little son of a gun, you know, and then he just wallops you right in front of
him. I live near a high school. I could, like, go to a game and then just, yeah, pick up, you know, yeah. Start screaming. Start, at
yeah, just
kids.
Start screaming at one of the kids, yeah. He comes over. I dare you.
Piece of shit.
I dare you to hit me.
Just get
boom.
I'm a bit knocked out.
But then he immediately, as you're on the ground, he sees the satisfaction, the grim satisfaction in your face, the morose satisfaction you are getting from it.
He's given me a gift.
He feels realize like he's that. Been hit.
Yeah, he got used by me.
You've given me a gift. You understand? We have a connection now.
I won this fight.
I'm going to go to school and be the principal here.
I'm getting a job. Yeah, I'm getting a job as a teacher. Why not? I can moonlight as a teacher. You know, I work remotely.
I'd custodian. They make the same amount.
Yeah, why not?
They don't have to talk to kids all day.
Exactly. What, you got to mop something? You got to, you know, clean up some turlets? Big whoop.
Nothing wrong.
I clean turlets all the time. You know?
I can dream about you if I can hold you tonight. That song's been in my head for 2 weeks now.
Who does that one?
I can dream. I can dream. I can dream. He says that at one point. I can dream. You know what I mean?
I know you can. You don't got to tell me
it's
twice.
It's just about like a guy stalking another song. One of the songs where he's like, just like, he's like, you know, I can't hold you because I'm in prison.
Well, yeah, every other song in the 70s and 80s was about, you know, being like a sexual predator,
molesting children,
raping. Yeah.
Young girl, get out of my heart.
17-year-old girls, many, many songs themed about. Yeah.
Even in the 80s, like even the hair rock people, they talked about it and sang. And the girls that would like in their videos were like 14.
Yep.
It's like, it's back then, bread and butter. Back then pedophilia was like sort of cool. It had like a cool. Now it's just pedophilia. People are just like, he's a pedophile. Back then you could be like, you know, we got Motley Crue guy and maybe do some naughty stuff. They were just naughty back then.
Was it Steven Tyler? He tried to adopt his girlfriend. Yeah,
I mean, come on, it's funny. He just adopted this 14-year-old girl so he could bring her on tour. He became the
legal guardian.
Legal guardian of this child so he could rape the girl all on
big
tour.
Deal. Oh, you're going to judge him for that? Oh, you're going to judge him?
In an elevator.
Yep. Are you going to say he's a bad person? He made Lovin' in an Elevator. What have you done?
Which is also about that song. There's a couple stanzas
one of my favorite stanzas.
People don't realize because that song is so good, but people don't realize that song is 26 minutes long.
Right. And just people, keeps
it
going.
It's it like, just goes by so quick. You're just like, oh, it's so short. No, it's a 26 minute long song.
It's an epic. It's a whole. It's like a whole novel. All this stuff that happens.
It is the Odyssey.
Yeah.
The Iliad. He's
it is the Iliad of rock and roll.
Able to tell a story unlike anyone has ever told.
he redefined.
He tells the story of him. He's like, I had to adopt her. There because he tells it straight up. He's like, look, he's like, and you understand why. He's like, legally, I wouldn't be able to do this. He's like, but if I do this, then I can. And then you're like, oh, I get it now.
I get it. You're a genius.
Right.
It's very pragmatic decision making.
You know, I had an argument with somebody about talking about like people who were, you know, like people who are like creeps or whatever. And they're like, oh, yeah, white trash people, the creepy people. And I was like, you know, country musicians and these people are like pedophile, creepy, religious. And I was like, man, you know who the worst is? It just regular old indie rock. They're like, it seems like the indie rock community, every 2 minutes, it's just like some guy, all these bands are always just doing something. They just seem
being naughty boys.
Always being implicated in that stuff. Not that the redneck people aren't doing it, I'm sure. Everyone is.
Look, it's just garbage all the way up and down.
Right.
Think
that's why the band that Marius and I were in, we would put heavy amounts of plastic and very thick plastic all around our private parts and around our downstairs, and so that and we heavily wrapped up in saran wrap
protectant against, you know, outside,
because sometimes we would probably want to do stuff and we would try to come at people and do rapes, but we physically couldn't because of the protection. So you were protected and we had protected you from us.
Yeah, we could sell that, you know, for to indie rockers, like a kind of a plastic tarp underpants that are really hard to,
you can't rape. He's like, I know you want to,
but you can't.
But you have, your a friend has the key to your chastity belt. Man, that's dark. That's dark stuff.
Yeah.
I don't like it. But I didn't invent this. I didn't invent this stuff. This is just stuff that's going on.
It just exists in the world. We're just interpreting it. We're just reporting on it.
We are reporters. Really what this show is, we're just reporters on...
Yeah. We're journalists.
Just, you know, casual observers. Just casually observing it.
What's the 60 Minutes guy? Andy Rooney or whatever. Is that his name?
God, look at that pedophile boy. My goodness, look at him. Like, who are we talking about? Oh, the Motley Crue people.
Yeah.
But worse is like Dean Martin. It's like, I had a band of 12-year-olds. David Bowie having sex with the 2 16-year-old girls. Mm-hmm. The story is just go on forever.
It just goes on and on.
I don't want this to be the note, but I guess it's going to be the note.
Yeah,
man, the pedophilia. Oh man, I like that. They're really good. Just the pedophilia episode was weird, man.
Gave me a bad vibe.
Man, they talked about it for too long. Couldn't sleep afterwards. I didn't invent it. I don't like it.
Yeah, I didn't do this.
Look, again, we are right now saying we are against it. Where is NPR on this issue? They have not.
Yeah, Terry Gross, Ira Glass, never gone on record against this kind of stuff. But Heavy Breather, you know, no hesitation. Just
don't like it.
Saying no to this stuff. Bad.
Your silence is deafening, Terry. Yep.
Terry, Ira.
On that note, love you guys.
Love you. Yeah, we'll see you. We'll see you soon.
See you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. my heart, robber of my soul. Where can you be? I wait patiently. My heart cries out. When you're alone, the going gets rough. Come back, come back, come back. I've had enough. Make me a queen, happy again. Hear my cry, please, my king. Thank you.
Thank you.